Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, and I am joined this evening by QB1 JR. What's going on, JR?
What's going on?
Joined by wide receiver 1, Miles Gorham.
Holler.
And RB4, Mr. Saxy Prince. What's cracking, man?
It's good. I mean, I have position flexibility, so that's the reason why I'm RB4. So,
kind of like a Percy Harvin, right? Yeah.
Speaking of which, what is the? So I'm gonna start with mine. I'm gonna start with mine. So the weirdest player comparison I have ever gotten, I told these guys just off the pod, was Percy Harvin. This dude probably has the worst artistic mind ever to have made that comparison to me. So I have to ask you guys, what is the worst like pro athlete comparison you have ever received?
So mine is pretty funny. I can't even say this with a straight face. So me and my uncle used to like crack on each other, but we use examples of athletes. So I used to think of the ugliest dude that I could think of. So my go-to guy was always Sam Cassell. That was my guy.
Sam Cassell
was horrible. So he always used to come back on me. And he used to always use two examples. He used to say Tyrone Hill and Darius Miles.
There it is. I knew the second one. I thought he was about to hit you with the Omeka Okafor, too.
Oh, man.
The ugliest dude to ever play in pro sports, though, is Hashim Tabit.
Oh.
Y'all remember him?
Well, you seen Manute Bol, too.
Man. By far.
How about you, Miles?
Oh, man. I mean, any light-skinned person. I've been
right?
I mean, if we're being real. But
all of y'all turn red. So.
Exactly. All right, no, for real. I'd say there's a few. I mean, I've gotten Jared hit me with the Jordan Farmar. I mean, I've gotten that one. I've gotten Blake Griffin, Steph Curry, which I don't see the Steph Curry one to me isn't – he didn't even close, but I've gotten probably Steph Curry.
Blake Griffin is a little off.
Yeah, it is.
Miles, you got freckles?
Like Blake is like Blake is light, like
he's got red hair. He's got like red.
Well, I mean, for me, I live in Canada.
Oh dear.
So I mean, there's one black professional athlete that any Canadian person knows. Like you look like PK. Like no, nah, man, no. I think that's the only black person you know. All right, so now that we got Yinka's random question of the day out of the way. No, that adds flavor to the pod.
That's not the pod, y'all.
So I can't really answer this next question because I'm Canadian and we don't really do the whole Memorial Day thing here. We had Victoria Day like the weekend before, but we don't need to get into all that. What y'all boys do for Memorial Day since we weren't recording, didn't have a pod? Yinka, what were you up to, man?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I mean, it was – I haven't done it in a while. I just play video games all day, to be perfectly honest. I just got my popsicles, lined them in a row, had some Starburst on the side, got a little lemon juice, and that's all I needed to do all day long. It's just chill.
What was the lemon juice for, my man?
It was not lemon – it was lemonade juice. My bad. It was Simply Lemonade. You guys need to get it. Best lemonade out there.
Okay. All right. All right. Mr. Gorham, since you were, on the road while we were recording last time, what were you up to over the Memorial Day weekend?
I had a busy weekend for sure. So I went up to Duluth on Thursday. One of my best friends getting married. He got married over the weekend. So on Friday, his father-in-law took the group out for charter fishing. Oh, my Lord. I got so seasick. We were there from like 9 in the morning to like 3 in the afternoon. and I couldn't fish at all. I'm just sitting in the bottom of the boat, just like rocking, because I couldn't handle myself.
That's because you weren't supposed to be out there, Miles.
Yeah, I know, but we don't need to get into that. But it was a good time, I mean, for them. And then the wedding was on Saturday, so that was a good time. It was a really, really fun wedding. We turned up, so, you know, had a good time, and then came home and hung out.
Good stuff, good stuff. QB1, how about yourself, man?
Just drove down, spent some time with the family, put some burgers, hot dogs on the grill, invited some of my mom and dad's friends over just because they haven't seen some of them in a little while, just because you know how old people get. They don't really like to be bothered from time to time. So I invited them over without them knowing, and they were happy to see everybody. So we had a good time and kicked it.
So just before we move on to the next thing, because I know it's kind of a regional thing. JR, you from the South. When you throw some burgers and some dogs on the grill, what do y'all call it? And then I guess the same question to the boys from Minnesota.
I mean, we just call it a cookout. Cookout and chill. That's what we call it down South.
All right, all right. Miles, Yinka?
Grilling. Probably the barbecue, you know.
See, you know, what Yinka just did there, that, you know, that's a faux pas. We don't need to get into all that regional stuff right now. But, you know,
y'all don't have barbecue up there.
You can't just throw some.
We grill. Don't let him get it. No, we grill up here.
You can't call it barbecue. Y'all don't have barbecue up there.
You can't just throw some hot dogs and burgers on the grill and call that a barbecue, man.
Right.
We grill up here.
That's strictly forbidden.
Y'all forget I'm African, right?
they barbecue?
Yeah, they do. Everything. Like that? Everything.
Okay. All right.
Let's y'all ever seen tofu barbecued?
Okay, stop. We are not talking about tofu on this pod today. We're getting things back on track right now. Vikings OTAs still ongoing. Last week, we had some hot takes fired off about OTAs, things that were getting people fired up. Miles getting his slow-mo shots of Treadwell going up, making one reception.
Sophomore surge.
Okay. Sophomore surge and all that good stuff. But, JR, you weren't here, so we got a couple weeks of OTA stuff. I guess five practices in the books that we can overreact to. What are your thoughts so far on what's been going on?
You know, there's been a lot of mixed reviews coming out as far as various position groups. I think the biggest battles are clearly at wide receiver and, you know, offensive line right now. Just various combinations that we've seen. I know everybody was going crazy when – I can't remember who tweeted it, but it was some beat writers that tweeted out that T.J. Clemens was at guard and Willie Beavers was at left tackle. But, you know, it's not a big deal to make an issue out of just because they're going to try various combinations at training camp or at OTAs and training camp, excuse me, just so they can avoid what they went through last year and not having guys locked in a certain position. So versatility is always good, but I think the biggest storyline, of course, is Teddy Bridgewater and Laquon Treadwell right now. And, you know, I know he's in a jersey and shorts, but Treadwell does look significantly better. He looks more explosive and he looks more polished from a year ago. And you can just tell by his quotes that he's matured a lot and he learned a lot from last year. And, you know, you hear different reports and stories about what happened with him last year. And, you know, we'll never know unless he comes out and says it or somebody else comes out and says it. I know Andrew Kramer had a really good podcast and article about it, but, you know, we'll never know the true story unless we hear Laquon tell it. He's not really a open guy. He's kind of, you know, I don't want to say boring in his interviews, but he's very smart the way he answers questions. But he's not a guy that's going to come out and tell you if something went wrong or, you know, if something was hurting him last year. But he's kind of taken last year in stride, and he's used it as motivation this year. And, you know, I know it's a highlight tape, and they're going to put up his good plays, but the good plays that they have put up there has been very impressive. So I really like what I'm seeing out of Laquon Treadwell. But my hot take from OTAs, Latavius Murray will never start a game in 2017.
Oh, boy.
That's my hot take.
Ooh, he's going fire.
I think Dalvin Cook is going to take the position, and I think he's going to run with it in preseason just because the quotes I'm hearing from Latavius, I'm not really liking what I'm hearing about this injury. Everybody keeps asking him, you know, what's your target date to get back? And he just keeps saying training camp is the plan. And I don't know how fast he's healing or if he's healing at all right now. He's been kind of candid about it. He's out the boot right now, but you see Dalvin and you see McKinnon getting all these reps, and I just think they're kind of overpassing him. And it's not like Latavius has been here for a while. He's new to this system as well. So, and, you know, learn the system. The only way you'll do that is by reps. There's only so much you can learn by just staring at the playbook. And that's all he's been doing right now. He's only been with Dalvin just the second week of OTAs. He's already way ahead of him. And then on top of that, he has to rehab from this injury. We all know Latavius wasn't the most nimble guy as far as, you know, foot speed and explosiveness. So I just think Dalvin Cook is going to take the position in preseason, and I think he's going to run with it. That's my hot take.
That is I guess we'll maybe call it a medium take, because I think that a lot of us are expecting Dalvin to come in and take the job, if not right away, pretty quick. But we did have a bit of an RB discussion while you were gone as well, JR. And, you know, with Dalvin potentially, in your view, kind of jumping in and taking that job right away, what kind of split do you think we'd see between him and McKinnon? And what do you think the best way to use Dalvin would be, you know, should he become the starter for the team?
I really don't think we can answer that question until the preseason, honestly, just because we don't know how Latavius is healing. We know what we have in Jerick McKinnon, and we don't know what we have in Dalvin Cook until we actually see him in an NFL game. And in my opinion, if Dalvin Cook flashes the way we expect him to, I think you play him. That's how I feel, because with rookies, the only way they'll learn is in-game reps. I'm a true believer in that. Unless we all talked about the quarterback situation, you can tell if they're ready or not early on. But with a running back, it's one of the most plug-and-play ready positions that we've seen in the past few years. We've seen a guy like Ezekiel Elliott and Jordan Howard step in preseason and day one and take the job and run with it. So if Dalvin Cook shows flashes of being a great player, I think you roll him out there from day one and you name him the starter.
And what kind of how many touches would you like to see Dalvin get from week to week?
I would say 25. That's counting passes and runs. I think he's a guy that can touch the ball. He can carry the ball 18 to 20 times a game, and you can give him 5 catches a game. I think that should be the target for him, and I think he's going to be a really good player. But I'm just ready to see it in the game, and I'm just very, very eager. He's one of the most eager players I'm ready to see on the field. I'm just really excited to watch him play because I think he could be a really good player.
Well, we already know what Yank is going to say, so we'll go to Miles first, because you look like you got, you know, a little something you want to get off your chest there. Miles, what's cracking?
No, I just thought it was 25 touches for Dalvin. I'm all for it. I'm not against it. I just have a hard time seeing it unless they're riding the hot hand. I have a hard time seeing it with both Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray on the roster too. seeing them just feature Dalvin as a rookie, at least early on. You know, maybe later in the season, you know, he's proven – he starts to prove himself and, you know, do all that, then I could definitely see it. But early on, I just don't picture them giving him 25 touches a game. But like I said, down the road. But I guess my hot take right now, I was talking to you guys earlier about this. I think Danny Isadora is going to start more games than Joe Berger will this year.
Ooh, I'm glad you brought that up, man, because I don't know, man, this Berger situation. When guys start openly talking about retirement like that, I just get nervous about having to rely on those dudes. I mean, you know, football is a grind, going through all this stuff. And, like, if you're already thinking about the other side, like,
right,
yeah, let the young boy get those reps. Where are you guys at with that? Prince, what you thinking?
Well, I'm just curious as far as you guys' opinions as well, because interesting you bring out, B-Rob is talking about that as well too, you know, how 2018 will be his last season. And you don't ever feel like a player, obviously, is not going to give as much and stuff. But B-Rob essentially has his retirement money, you know? I mean, it's definitely time for Danielle Hunter to start stepping in. But I think I like Berger as being the right guard just because I think his play speaks for itself. But that's just my thing. I think Berger will be there a lot longer than Isadora will be.
One thing real quick with B-Rob, I just think – He can, not that he can coast because there's no way, but he's not going to play the reps that we're expecting, like a Joe Berger to go. We're not expecting, you know, B-Rob to be an every down player anymore. That's going to be Danielle Hunter. Joe Berger, though, that's your everyday right guard. I mean, you know, every snap, every game. So that's where I have a hard time with it more than like a B-Rob, just because, you know, B-Rob gets to play that rotational guy. He gets to, you know, just use all his energy on a few plays instead of, you know, throughout the entire season and, you know, take every snap, every rep. So that's just my thought on it. But I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
Berger should be used the same. He should be a utility guy, in my opinion. He should be your sixth. 100%. He should be your sixth offensive lineman.
Yep, I agree because he can play left guard, center, and right guard. Why not? If, that's what I've been saying. If Danny Isadora can show enough during the training camp and preseason that he can be a starter, I think they should let him take it and let Berger be that sixth man, like you said.
I agree. And the only reason why I only disagree with that is just because of all the things that we've seen as far as this offensive line. You know, do you potentially take lower offensive line play, you know, even if Isadora does show enough, just to have Berger as a utility, or would you rather have maybe slightly higher offensive line play but have a guy like Isadora in your back pocket if you need to slide him in and he's ready?
Well, right. I just think Isadora can only play – is only a right guard right now. So that's where I'm saying, you know, if Isadora is plugged in at right guard, Joe Berger can play everywhere besides tackles, right, obviously, but he could play the three interior roles. So that's just where I see it as.
Bro. Yeah. And I told y'all this earlier. I think Berger will start the year out, but I think as the year goes on, they'll phase him out just because, you know, Isadora has to get those reps. They got to think 2018 and beyond with that position, in my opinion. You can't go in the next year. And knowing Isadora is an unknown, that's just my opinion. I think he has to get some reps at some point this year.
Oh, Yinka, I didn't really go to you. You got a hot take? Anything that you've been noticing and the interviews, any of the articles that you've been reading? What are your thoughts? What's coming out of the OTAs that's got you hyped up or that you're noticing or that's a storyline that you want to highlight?
I've been trying to mull this over, but I think I'm okay. I could be wrong on this. I will not be surprised if Treadwell starts the season as one of the outside guys. I think he'll be one of them. I mean, it's pretty bold, but I think he could push it enough to potentially become the X come the start of the season.
Wait, hold up. You say that they're about to bench the people's champ, Adam Thielen?
It really depends on what people you're talking about, but but no, I think what you're going to see from Treadwell, and I've been a huge Treadwell fan from day one. I still want to see him grow, but I think he will insert himself this offseason to be the X start of the season. That's my hot take.
Well, all right then. Well, I think that's enough OTA overreaction from us. And we're going to go ahead and put things on pause for a hot second and try to get our guest for the evening on. So bear with us here. We got a special guest for you, and we'll be back on the other side. All right, y'all. So we have a special guest for you this evening. We have Matthew Coller, writer extraordinaire from ESPN 1500. You can also listen to him on the Purple Podcast. Mr. Coller, how's it going this evening?
It's doing good. I'm really psyched for OTAs, not the NBA Finals.
Yes. We're all very psyched about OTAs and definitely won't be getting through this quickly so that we can go and watch the NBA Finals. So with that said, we're going to dispense with a little of the small talk. We already have seen your takes on chicken wings in Minnesota versus Buffalo and some other things like that. So let's jump right into what the people really want to hear. And can you give us a little bit of the background on the article that you wrote about why everyone believes in Teddy and how you were able to get all the information to write such an awesome story?
Yeah, sure. Anytime you ever see a good story written by anyone, not to pat myself on the back for that, but I just mean in general, from any journalist, they probably got a lot of help along the way to do that. And so I asked around quite a bit about people that might know Teddy's background going back to Louisville or high school. And when I stumbled upon the Eli Rogers story, his really good friend whose mother had AIDS and he helped Eli through and they both ended up in the NFL now, I was kind of pointed in that direction by just some people that I talked to. And then took it from there. After I found out that story, then I was able to reach out and connect with one of his former coaches who gave me a lot of background information about what makes Teddy so special. I had really just sought out to find why Mike Zimmer praise Teddy the way he did. It's very unusual. You just don't hear any coach talk about any player. Even if it's Tom Brady, you don't hear Bill Belichick say, I love Tom Brady, and have that sort of effusive praise. So I wanted to find out what made Teddy so different. And I think with those couple of stories from his ex-coach and from Eli Rogers, I think I got a really good handle of that.
That's awesome. And one of the things that I heard you mention on the Purple podcast, when you were talking about some of the things that players told you that didn't necessarily make it in the article, when they were talking about, you know, Teddy's leadership and different things like that. And another article that you just wrote kind of prompted another conversation amongst all of us when you were talking about, you know, Diggs potentially being that face of the franchise guy. And so we were interested in, I guess, maybe understanding some of that, you know, that Sam Teddy dynamic and how that works with people viewing Teddy as, you know, that out front leader or that leader guy, but Sam still being there, then maybe someone else might be the face of the franchise, and how that will play and how that's looking from your perspective.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of the most interesting storylines to keep an eye on is as Teddy recovers, if there are any issues with Sam Bradford, how the locker room feels about that, or if Bridgewater is on his way back and looking like he might make the field again, that really puts a lot of pressure on Sam Bradford. I do know this, though. It's amazing. Teddy Bridgewater is, by all accounts, an amazing human being, and what he's done behind the scenes is tried to help Sam Bradford by working with the wide receivers to see through Bradford's eyes and what he might be seeing downfield and things like that, which is really incredible and maybe not something you would generally expect, that a quarterback would be helping the other quarterback. But I think with Sam Bradford, most players view him as a guy who gives them a chance. Not a guy that they will exactly at this moment follow anywhere he asks them to go, like Teddy Bridgewater. I don't think there's that love yet, especially because they didn't make the playoffs. What matters most to all of these guys, number one, is winning. That's what they respect the most. That's what they saw Teddy do when he went 11-5. And so players aren't apt to sit here like us on Twitter and argue about completion percentage or touchdowns or quarterback rating. They want to win, and they see the guy, Teddy Bridgewater, was the one who took them to the playoffs, and they saw him with fourth quarter comebacks and big plays on third down. So there is that sort of view of him that he is above Bradford. It would be very difficult for Bradford to clear that, but I also think still at this moment has the belief of the locker room that he can get them to the playoffs. And I don't think that Teddy Bridgewater is going to make that into an awkward situation. And that's what is great if you're Mike Zimmer about having Bridgewater, is he's going to help the situation more than he's going to hurt it. And with Stephon Diggs being a leader, I think what we've seen with Diggs, even from the beginning of last year, is a guy who's really maturing into this role, that over the first 2 years, he came in kind of like a junkyard dog. I'm a fifth round draft pick. I'm going to prove myself to everyone, and having that sort of attitude, which comes with a real chip on your shoulder. But I think what we're seeing this offseason and maybe toward the end of last year is him understanding he knows he's a star. And now the next level of being a star is being that leader as well, since Teddy Bridgewater can't be that leader on the field every Sunday, at least for the foreseeable future.
And one of the things you touched on there was kind of how Sam will need to show it on the field, obviously, to get the full buy-in from the locker room. What are your expectations for Sam Bradford's play? Obviously, you know, we all listen to the Purple podcast, and the other guys give you a bit of grief calling you a Sam truther and things like that. kind of, what are your expectations for how he performs and how that translates to the Vikings' success on the field?
I don't have much different expectations than I had last year for Sam Bradford, and I wouldn't expect him to be a different guy this year. Maybe a slightly better version with some more protection and maybe a couple of more weapons that he can throw to. But I think Sam Bradford's major issue is a fundamental one as opposed to one that can change with circumstances. And that's, I was going back and watching some of the Thanksgiving Day tape that, you know, as we talked about a lot, where some fans maybe turned on Sam Bradford at that point because he failed so many times on third down. So I was going back and watching it. And there are many times where I think a more dynamic quarterback would have not escaped the pocket like a Cam Newton and run, but move within the pocket, create time for himself, as opposed to just going with the first read and dumping it down quickly to Kyle Rudolph underneath. I had a stat that Bradford throwing to Kyle Rudolph on third down, he got 16 first downs on 44 targets toward Kyle Rudolph. I mean, that's just way too many times not getting first downs when you're going to that dump off option. And I think that that is a major frustration of watching Sam Bradford. But I also don't think that it's something that changes just because you add Michael Floyd or you draft Rodney Adams or you give him average tackles like Mike Remmers and Riley Reiff, and in pass protection, they might be below average still. So he's still going to face a good amount of pressure, I think, this year. But I do think that the way he performed last year is mostly good enough to get you into the playoffs. I mean, you could go through they got this break or they didn't get this break and so forth. But if a guy's going to complete a high number of his passes and he's going to average 7 yards per attempt, it's not level, but it's also not going to keep you away from the playoffs if you have a running game, you play great defense, things like that. I mean, having the dead last running game, I'm a truther when it comes to who needs to run the ball, but you can't be dead last. That's going to cost you a lot of points. So they will improve in that area, that I can guarantee. And I think he puts them in a position not to be a 12-4 team, but also not to be a 5-12 team either, or 5-11 team. Maybe it's going to depend on who gets hurt, what kind of breaks you get. You're probably going to be somewhere in that 10-6 to 7-9.
Only the Vikings could go 5-12 too. So.
Yeah, they find a way. Right.
And before we got you on, JR had a hot take about Dalvin Cook and what his workload might look like early in the season and him seizing this opportunity with Latavius Murray on the sideline. And you just wrote another piece where you were looking at some of the projections for the Vikings players that came out on ESPN. I guess, what are your thoughts on potentially Dalvin Cook coming in and taking the monster share of that workload with him being a rookie coming into the NFL?
The thing that makes this Viking season so interesting to me, and I just can't wait for it to get here, is that there are so many wild cards. And even though I believe in Dalvin Cook's talent, and he looks like a guy going back, watching Florida State and talking to people already, that could be one of those immediate impact players. He could blow up right away, be a rookie of the year type of candidate, but there are still question marks about him. I don't think him as a player so much that we know what kind of talent he has, and his explosiveness is NFL level. The thing that I really like to hear from coaches and teammates is that he sees the field extremely well. I think that that gets running backs much more often than physical skill. I think a lot of them are fast, but if you can't read plays and you can't slow things down at this level, then you're probably going to end up being Trent Richardson. But I don't think that's going to be a Dalvin Cook problem. I think he's a guy who can step right in, but there is time period between now and then, and there's training camp, but there's time off. And I think that the worries about Dalvin Cook and his background and personality are legitimate. I mean, I couldn't possibly try to bet one way or another whether I think he'll get in trouble again. I have no idea, though I do like that they put his locker next to Terrence Newman. I think that was very smart. But if we're just talking about, let's say that everything off the field is fine, he's gotten along with teammates great. So far, it seems like everybody's happy with him. Let's just say that. I could definitely see him separating himself from Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon and being the feature back and putting up something like 1,200 yards and 40 catches because he has that type of talent. And even when you see him out there, OTAs running around in shorts, it's really obvious the type of skill that he has.
Well, all right, JR, you got somebody else in your corner with your with your hot take there. You got some backing from the man.
Great minds think alike.
So I guess before we get you out of here, I guess what in your view is the most underreported storyline kind of right now for those of us who follow the Vikings? What's the one thing that yeah, we're all missing that potentially could have a huge impact on the Vikings season?
Well, it's a great question, and I follow you guys on Twitter, so you guys don't leave any stones unturned when it comes to every possible story. You've got the third right guard on the depth chart locked down and analyzed, so you guys don't miss anything. But I think when it comes to fans, that they look at last year like it was mostly a fluke, and a lot of it was with Teddy Bridgewater going down and things like that. But I'm not sure that people have yet wrapped their minds around that if this team doesn't make the playoffs, there's a very real possibility we could be talking about a new general manager and head coach. I think that that is absolutely a real possibility, because at the ownership level, I think they expect this team, with the money that they've poured in to fix the offensive line, to bring in Latavius Murray, to bring in Michael Floyd, the risk that they've taken here, I think at the ownership level, they expect this team to compete for a Super Bowl, that Minnesota is going to be on the national stage. It's going to be talked about every day in the NFL. Hey, that's Super Bowl in Minnesota. Who's going there? And if your team goes 6-10 when you're hosting the Super Bowl, I think that that would add a little extra sting to a bad season, no matter what the excuse was. If Sam Bradford got hurt and Case Keenum led them to a magical 6-10 season, I mean, that wouldn't be Mike Zimmer's fault. But at the same time, I think at this point, you would be talking 4 years in, you'd be talking one time in the playoffs and no playoff wins. Even if it's Blair Walsh's fault, it's still no playoff wins. And I think that might end up resulting in them, both Spielman and Zimmer, going, if that happened. Now, I don't know if I would bet that or not for them going 6-10. Like I said, I could see this season going so many different directions. I would have trouble placing a bet on this team. But I don't think that that's something that the fan base is necessarily prepared for, or that it's come up at all, as these two guys being on the hot seat. But if things start to go downward next year, and especially if we see Zimmer struggle with the locker room to handle certain guys and certain personalities, then I think we could be talking about that issue pretty fast. So I think right now it's just not even on the radar, but it could be pretty quickly.
I think I have a quick question for you, Matthew. So Matt or Matthew, which one do you prefer?
It doesn't matter. I usually go with Matthew, but it's fine.
All right. So just a quick question. You're talking about personalities in the locker room. I know in the past Rick has been really adamant about not bringing in, you know, certain players and with off-the-field issues, certain personalities and such, because he wanted to build that core. Now we've seen guys like Dalvin Cook. That'd be probably my biggest example right now, but like a Dalvin Cook, you know, with the off-the-field issues and such like that. Where do you kind of see the locker room now in terms of being able to bring those kind of players in? Or is it more of just Rick saying, I'm not going to pass up on talent anymore. I'd rather just, you know, take the talent and kind of deal with maybe potential consequences off the field?
Yeah, I think that what the pick of Dalvin Cook and the signing of Michael Floyd tells you is that Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer also have it in their minds that there could be trouble if this season goes like last year. Basically, that, like you said, in the past, they might have steered clear from a Dalvin Cook or from a Michael Floyd. But this year, it's sort of, you know, we really have to win. This has to be a good season for the Minnesota Vikings. So we're willing to push that box out a little farther that we have, or not red dot guys. That's the term that he likes to use, red dotting guys at the draft. Maybe not red dotting certain players or things like that. As far as this locker room goes, it has been my experience with every NFL locker room that I've covered, which has been a handful from when I covered football in Buffalo and now here in Minnesota, that if things start to go down, that's when everything falls apart. There's just too many guys, too many personalities, too many competitors. And I think we saw it last year that if you go 8-8 after starting 5-0, there isn't a locker room in the NFL that's going to be fine, that there is going to be problems. But I think what last year set up is if this team does get off to a slow start, it might be really tough to turn the ship around with the locker room. Maybe other teams might hold off from going nuts if it's the Packers and they know that they've got Aaron Rodgers who can bring them back, or it's the Patriots if they ever got off to a bad start, which they never do. But just say they went 0-3 or something like that. It's not the same story here. I think if Sam Bradford goes 0-3 and Mike Zimmer, that those two are going to have a really tough time keeping everybody on the same page to go forward without losing their confidence and without having things happen like the cornerbacks deciding they were going to cover Green Bay wide receivers different than Mike Zimmer said, like at the end of last year.
Another quick question to piggyback off that. with, you know, the leadership and whatnot and Zimmer and everything that he's going through, considering he's going through a lot of things in his own personal life, obviously the multiple eye mm-hmm. surgeries and whatnot, what happens to this team? Is Zimmer, you know,
quote unquote, goes down. You know, if he can't continue to be that head coach, that stern voice that you hear constantly, what happens in the season if a guy like Zimmer goes down?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. For a game or two, I think you'd be fine. In fact, really, I was very impressed with the way that George Edwards and Mike Prefer handled things last year. I mean, if you think about it with the Cowboys, Prefer handles the clock extremely well at the end of that game, giving Sam Bradford an opportunity to go down and throw the touchdown to Jerick McKinnon. And nearly, maybe if it wasn't for a missed call, they could have tied that game. But just one of the many weird things that happened last year. But I thought his clock management was better than what we get from Mike Zimmer a lot of times. And George Edwards was just fine at calling and executing the defense. But if you were asking for a long period of time, I kind of think about it like with a backup quarterback, say. Any backup quarterback in the league, you hope that if your quarterback goes down for four games, you could win two of them. And I think that's probably the case with Case Keenum, right? Like, okay, maybe the guy could go 500 if you needed him for four games and you could keep your season alive. That's probably the case with Mike Prefer and with George Edwards. If Zimmer had to be gone for a really long period of time, that might throw things off for quite the loop, because Zimmer is so involved. He's so involved in the game planning and everything from top to bottom. Sometimes you might argue too much so, but and I know that this year he's had a major influence on what the offense is going to do as well. So I think that that could be a problem if he had to be gone for a long period of time. But honestly, you know, who knows, right? With the NFL, it's like everybody on a coaching staff has their defined roles down to a T, to the point where you can run OTAs and training camp and everything else, and everything is kind of set up and ready to go, that you would just be asking George Edwards to be doing the game planning, which, nothing against George, I have a little less trust in him than I do Mike Zimmer.
And that's fair. And I think that we're right up against the time that we have you here. And what we don't want to have happen is for you to be attacked again for us having a negative podcast where we talk things about the Vikings and people tell you that you're not being optimistic enough. So let's leave this on a more positive note. What do you have on deck for us? What kind of articles? What can we expect from you in the coming days and weeks here in your Vikings coverage?
Well, that's thank you for asking that. Well, first of all, I mean, just there's nothing more exciting than going out and watching guys practice at OTAs. So, but you know, what's really great about this team is there are so many interesting storylines, even from just position to position. Like, I'm really fascinated to see what happens at the three technique defensive tackle. I mean, are we going to see Jaleel Johnson emerge as a fourth round draft pick? Are we going to see Dayton Jones go from linebacker to somebody who can make an impact on a play-to-play basis? So I got an article that's also coming out too. I'm going to be watching that closely, but an article coming out, a column about Mackenzie Alexander and how I think that Mike Zimmer isn't just blowing OTA smoke when he's talking about how he feels about Mackenzie Alexander, because and I'll spoil it for you guys. My opinion is that with NFL teams, you shouldn't listen to what they say. You should watch what they do if you want answers. And I was keeping an eye on it closely, and I was making all sorts of suggestions for free agent nickel corners. Hey, what about Nickel Robey Coleman? How about this guy? And they didn't sign anybody. And I'm sure that if they had offered Nickel Robey Coleman enough money, that he would have come to Minnesota instead of LA. But instead they chose not to bring in anybody at that position, which tells me there's a true belief that Mackenzie Alexander can take it. And that's not going to be easy. I don't think the nickel corner spot is like a whole different position than playing on the outside. But that's going to be fascinating to watch. But I think that if there's anybody in the world to trust when it comes to their opinions on cornerbacks, it's Mike Zimmer. So it's really interesting to me that he's showing so much belief there. And then, you know, I'll have some other features coming as well. You know, I did the Bridgewater one. I did one on Xavier Rhodes earlier this offseason, too, about his rise to becoming a star. And so, you know, I've just a little tease. I got something cooking up on Latavius Murray as well. So, you know, just keep your eyes peeled. Keep following the retweets.
Definitely will be doing that. And given that this this will be posting on the I Don't Hate Sam Bradford blog. We're going to need you to get one of those features about Sam Bradford done here before the summer's over as well. Okay, sir?
Hey, I did last year, I did a feature after the Houston game where I talked about Sam Bradford. It was a long thing, 3,000 words or so, about how he was very likely the future of the Vikings and that he was good enough to lead them to the playoffs if they continued to have a defense this good. So I do get labeled a truther. I do get labeled a hater. I just think that I see Bradford as he is, as opposed to what I hope he can be or whatever some fans might look at that way. And I also don't analyze stats that don't matter, like completion percentage and things like that. So I think I try to just fairly analyze his strengths and weaknesses without being a homer or hater.
Final question. Who do you have in the finals?
Oh,
I'm gonna go Cavs in seven.
Oh, woo! Damn, Matthew, damn it.
Woo! Wow. JR might come and ask if you can
my man. My man.
No, am I the only Golden State?
No, you're not Miles, but we save that for later.
I am terrible. I am terrible. As good as I think I am at watching sports and enjoying them and writing about them, I am terrible at picking games. I do not gamble on sports because I'm really bad at it. So, like last year, for example, after the Vikings were 5-0, I picked them to win the next seven games in a row.
It was your fault then.
Yes, it was my fault. And they lost, you know, how many ever of them. So I'm not the guy to ask picking games. I just think this is Kyrie Irving series. I think he goes off.
He's the key player.
He's exactly.
Hey, are the Preds coming back? You think so? You think the Predators are going to come back?
No, I don't. I don't think you come back on Sidney Crosby. I think Crosby can come back on you, but I don't think you come back on him. Yeah. That's just going to be too tough. It's too bad, too, because I would have loved to seen P.K. Subban raise the cup.
Yes.
Like, just raise it up and show it to Montreal. Like, you guys won't be getting any one of these anytime soon.
How about that? How about that? Real quick. How about the goals that got wiped? The first his goal, the first game. Like, how do they overturn that? I don't understand how they overturn that, but we don't need to get into it.
Please do not start. because then people are really going to think I'm negative because that that made me never want to watch hockey ever again.
Right. Just, I'm a hockey guy too.
It was the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, just. Not only did they get the rules wrong because the guy had possession of the puck, but also the fact that we're analyzing a skate blade 1 inch off the ice. It would be like analyzing every time someone took an extra step in the NBA. It'd be like going to the review booth and looking up, you know what? That dunk you just saw that was amazing. No, actually, he shuffled his feet a little. Sorry, guys. And think about that. Like, anybody who wanted to see some cool hockey and wanted to see P.K. Subban play because they've heard about him, they tuned in. He scored. Yes, this is so exciting. This is hockey, man. I'm into this. And then they took 5 minutes to take it away. And, I mean, if you weren't on HGTV or watching The Bachelorette by then, then you're just a hockey nut like me. But it was just the worst.
Wow. So you gonna plug the hockey podcast that you do with Judd as well? Because you were fired up right there.
That right there, actually, we're posting a new episode that we recorded today. That's a little bit of a preview. Yes, there was some early ranting about that before we got into the rest of the series, for sure.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you very much for coming on tonight. Don't want to keep you away from the finals any longer. So, thank you. And you have a good night, man.
All right. I appreciate it. And I appreciate following all you guys on Twitter. You always have good and interesting ideas. And sometimes, I'll just tell you the truth, I steal your ideas and write about them. So,
We knew it.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Yep. Take care, guys.
You know, you could be all the things you've always wanted to be. Beautiful. Sexy. Jesus, 1, 2, 3.
Just let your soul glow. Just let it shine through. Just let your soul glow, baby. Feeling oh so silky smooth. Just let it shine through. Yeah. Just let your soul glow.
Soul glow.
All right, so you just heard our interview with ESPN 1500's Matt Collar. And we're going to wrap this episode with everyone's finals predictions. Prince, where you at?
I'm going Golden State in 7.
Okay. All right. I'm nervous about doing this over here. We got Miles and JR. We already know they're on opposite sides, and both of them clenching their fists, ready to go. I'm going to go with JR first. Where you at with it, man?
Cavs in 7.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Gorham.
Yeah, I'm going Warriors in 6.
Okay. Ooh.
Ooh. I know everybody thinks it has to go 7, but it doesn't have to go 7. So if it's not, you know, I'm taking Golden State.
All right. And I'm going with JaVale McGee for finals MVP.
Hey, throw that money down too.
Got to get that bet in. So that's all we got for you guys tonight. I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And we'll be back, I guess, sooner rather than later. Good night, y'all.